Of my friends listening on radio, or some of you are listening using merely the power of your mind, as I am right now, and some of you using a computer, which is a sort of artificial mind that you are using to filter things through. Well, I have something for you to filter today in the form of a question. What if the city of Cincinnati, Ohio was time itself? I mean an embodiment of time. I mean the very figure of time. If time were a sculpture, it would be Cincinnati. If time were a painting, it would be Cincinnati. Cincinnati, the perfect form of time. And therefore, because it is an object, it is a place, we can journey toward it. Yes, that seems absurd if time were anything but Cincinnati, Ohio. But because it is, let's journey towards it. Let's take a vacation in time. Let's start out in Kentucky, where all journeys start from. Everyone, including Abraham Lincoln, started his life journey from Kentucky. His family got together one day and said, "We're leaving. Let's leave Kentucky. Only then will life start." Well, that's true only with the direction of time. Now, some things are behind us, and some things are ahead of us. And in this case, the thing ahead of us is behind us, because on the way to Cincinnati, in our mind, the Cincinnati of time, we are going to go through a place called Big Darn Lick or something like that. It's a place in northern Kentucky, and it is a park, and I guess it's where buffalo licked things. They'd go through in there and say, "Everything here is salty," like it is in Kentucky, and they take a big bone lick. That's what it is. Gosh, I hope that's what it is, and that I didn't just blurt that out, but big bone lick. And there they found remains of mammoths and mastodons. Now you say, what is the difference? Well, a mastodon has a very flat head and what they call instances in a fetiverse, while a mammoth is woolly and has sort of a big bumpy thing on its head. Now, you could see them, and one, their tusks are different size, but they don't tell you which. So it's like the lying twin paradox. It's not really a paradox, it's a little game. Both of them are lying. They say only one's lying. That's a lie. The whole thing, we're asking, is the other twin lying? Yes, he's a liar. You're a liar. You're a liar. So that, don't even mess with that. Because the one you ask is the liar. Usually. That's for life, too. And it is for me. Sometimes I lie and I don't know I'm lying. One time someone stopped me on the street and they said, "Do you know where Baptist Hospital is?" And I gave them perfect directions to a different hospital. To Saint something. So I'm like, oh, no, whoops. I sent them to the Catholic hospital. Now what are they going to do? They're going to get there, and before surgery, they're going to say, "I don't know, Eucharist, I don't know what that is," or something like that. So I didn't mean to lie, but I did, and maybe I'm lying right now. So does it matter if the person telling you the lie knows they are fabricating? I think most storytellers tell you right off the bat, "I'm a storyteller." And I don't say that. I'm not telling you stories. I'm telling you truth. It's just the way I'm telling it is rather absurd and illogical. But we can get to truth through all sorts of things, through paintings and through Cincinnati. And through looking at the bones of animals. Now, when I saw they got a little exhibit there at Big Bone Lick, and I can imagine scouts going there and people saying, "I want to put children in uniform and march them in front of this so they know that there were bones here." That's something that, at least in my youth, that was a value. So they got a little exhibit there of the animals dying in agony. Now, the funny thing is that the animals are represented in incredibly realistic sculptures. Right down to their guts, there's birds eating their guts out. And they're human pursuers who are throwing arrows at them are stylized. They're in these two-dimensional metal cutouts of people. Just the shadows of humans. And I thought that was interesting. Is he not? Where? Let's put some realistic things of the humans eating the guts out of the gentle old antique elephants. And I'm not blaming people. I'm just saying, put it like it is out there at Big Bone Lick. If you're going to call it Big Bone Lick, let's go all the way. Because it seems like your premise is we can say whatever the hell we want. So let's just put it on out there. Show them eating the intestines. And then they have some live bison, which is you walk up to it, and it's just like those lobster tanks. We say, I will have that one for dinner. And you say, oh, I will feast upon that bison. No, that's not true. I'm kidding. I make jokes about us all eating one another, all creatures, and because that happens. And when I do comedy just for animals, they get it. They're like, yeah, you can be something. Sometimes it'll eat you. And I go, yes, you get it. Doesn't mean you have to eat something to recognize that there's a lot of eating going on. And it could be you. You don't know whether you're I don't know whether I'm going to be the main course or the person that the waiter goes, have you dined with us before? No, I have not. So you've never been to a fancy restaurant like this? No. Well, let me say, I'm going to emphasize very strange words. Like I'll say things like, we are serving steak this evening. It does come with a sauce that will be served on something else. So just get ready for that. There's a different way of speaking. And I know that if you've ever seen a Shakespeare play, your teacher's told you that. Say, you're going to hear Shakespeare now, and it's not in the language that you're used to. Yes, it is, because we're going to hip-hop Shakespeare. Don't do that. Well, you can do that. Who cares? It's not precious. I don't like the original very much, some of it. I know you shouldn't say that, but it's a little dated. So is Alf. I'm not going to, it's all like, let's all make our contemporary stuff is the best. Because you go, I know what they're talking about. So, you know, you get the references and everything. I remember when I was a child, when I saw Citizen Kane, I said, oh, is that supposed to be Hearst? I said like that in a childish voice. I didn't say that because I didn't know that. I didn't, and I don't think I saw Citizen Kane, even though Orson Welles was a friend of the family. No, that's not. I don't know if that's true or not. I like when people say, oh, my family's history's up. My family's always said, I think that liars, their influence endures, doesn't it?
Yeah, my grandpa always told us.
Uh-oh. You know, who was he, really? But I, you know, my legacy might be that. Well, Hardy said, Hardy's playing a joke on the future or something, or your present, my future, our past. Oh, which is it? Well, let's head towards Cincinnati and find out, because if we don't get there, we're still outside of time. Do you understand that? So when you're outside of the city limits, you've not crossed the Kentucky River. You are not in Cincinnati proper.
Oh, now, I'm going to stop you for a minute because I only know...
Can I do it in my voice? I only know Cincinnati from the sitcom. The reason they call them that is they're all set. It's a set pattern. Setcom. And the radio station in Cincinnati. It's going to come to me. KWRP. No, that's WKRP. But there was one out on... KWRP is out on the West Coast. WKRP. I wish I remember that Fishbone song because they name all the radio stations and then you know. But KRP in Cincinnati. Now that Cincinnati is the original general. So that's KRP in Cincinnati. And it's very old. I don't even know if they were in Cincinnati. I know the opening is pictures of it. That you can fool people that way. You go, oh, look, Carol O'Connor was in Queens. No, he wasn't. No, he wasn't. That's a photo. That's just they filmed that earlier. And then they're in a soundstage in Los Angeles. They're not even in Queens. They could be. I don't know. Maybe they were. Yeah, they were at Carsey Grocery Blurber. No, I don't think they were. You mean where Sesame Street is filmed?
Yes.
I don't think so. But maybe. I don't know where things are filmed. In the TV world or anything like that. But, gosh, there was a day when Bill Cosby was going to work right there with Elmo at the same studio. How about that? That's something to think about. Oh, my goodness. I'm outside of... We're in Cincinnati. We got here. That's the great thing about taking one of these buses where somebody else is driving. Because we can get lost in conversation. All of a sudden, we're there. Now, one of you, we left at Big Bone Lick. I know that. I heard you get out. You think I don't hear you turning out of the radio show. I hear you turning it off. That's all right. Boy, that's the worst thing about one of those live streams thing. And you go, oh, my friend. Hey, Sean's here. Sean's gone. You know, like that. Oh, hey, Deborah. Debbie's gone. I don't want to see that. I like the anonymity of the radio. I don't want to see who's popping in. Oh, there's five. Should I wait to start? That's the thing with those streams. Hello, is my Facebook stream. I see there's five of you, four of you. I'm going to wait to start, three of you. Hang on, there might be so. Hey, Brian, don't leave. I'm fixing to start just a minute. Three of you, great. Is that two of you? All right, I'm going to get ready to start as soon as it. See, if that's the case with radio, too, it is a possibility that when I'm speaking at any given time, no one is listening. And I know you say, can monitor the station 24 hours a day? Doesn't he have like an earbud? Shouldn't he be? No one's listening. Sometimes no one's listening. Now, I know there's a radio at the station. You're supposed to keep it on and go, don't ever shut this off. If this ever gets shut off, literally no one's listening. And we lose our special badge, our internet 5% badge or something. As we enter Cincinnati, we've got to really consider what we're going to do. And the first thing I want to do is I want to head to the Cincinnati Museum of Art because there's a particular John Singer Sargent painting I want to see. I like to visit individual paintings. It's one thing to go to a museum and browse around and look at different things. I find it rather exhausting. It's like going to a party and try to visit with every single friend. You can't do it. By the time you get to some at the end of the party, you'll be exhausted. You're going, ha. So I go and I visit with an individual friend sometimes. That is, go to a museum, pick a painting you like that's moved you, and go visit with it. So I go to the Cincinnati Museum now. Here we go. Click, 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 click. And we're going to see a John Singer Sargent painting from 1882 called Venetian Lady or Venetian Girl or something like that. Some people call it Girl Holding a Fan, but she's not holding a fan. She's holding, I think, glass tubes. That's only because I've read about the painting, but it looks like a fan. She's standing there. It's a very large painting, by the way. It's as big as I am, and it's beautiful. And I stare at it. It's not just the beauty of the model. For me, it's just the economy of strokes in the painting. So much is conveyed through the color and the stroke of that brush. And you can see it, and it's like magic. It's like seeing how it's done, and it works anyway. I am never not blown away by it. It's as if I can see all the components that led up to it, and still it doesn't make any sense to me. How does it come together like that? So I like to visit it, and I sometimes get very moved. I went to see it. It's not there. It's not there. It's not there. We look. There's another painting there. It's not a sergeant. There's no sergeant in the room. The sign says sergeant. I run to a guard. Guard, where has the sergeant painting gone? I know someone didn't take it because there's another one there. He said, she's traveling. I said, oh, I come to see her. He goes, listen, you've been missing out. There is a better John Singer Sargent painting. Oh, it's small, yes. You could walk right by it. But it's from his later period. Not his early period. That's fine, too. This is 30 years later. And it's two girls fishing. It's up there on your left. I love it. I work here so I can see it every day, he said. So I walked to the painting. And there it was. And it is small. It's like, I'm all, you know. For 18 inches, and I looked at it, and it had the same economy of strokes, except they were myriad, and the light. There was two girls sitting on the bank of a river, two beautiful girls, dressed in these, you know, those old-fashioned dresses, and just both of them in sort of profile, but everything rendered in absolute perfection. And I was stunned. I was stunned by the beauty of it all. I was stunned by John Singer Sargent being nowhere around anymore. The mind that that was in is gone. What did that? Just an object is the proof that that happened. I can't even imagine him doing it. I can't even imagine the scene anymore. I'm blown away. There's too much to think about and feel. I get overwhelmed. I start to cry, and I don't know why. I think it's the combination of things. It's not just the beauty. You don't cry when things are beautiful. You cry when you have some very acute realization of time, when time slaps you in the face, and you suddenly feel as if you're separated slightly from things, and it becomes gorgeous and tragic at the same time. And so that's how I know that this thing in front of us, it is time. That's time right there. I recognize it when I see it. I recognize it when I see it, because when I'm looking at this painting, I'm moving my eyes around. I'm nowhere all at once. I'm only one place, and I'm moving around in it. And that's the way I feel about all these things. The whole life is a museum, moving from room to room, seeing different things. And they don't hit the same every time. Now, we could move on, or we could stay here. But I would like to go see something else, too. I would like to go see real signs. Let's go to the Sign Museum. There's an American Sign Museum there in Cincinnati, too. Let's drive a little ways, only a few miles away, in kind of a warehouse. And there's those flashy neon signs, those blinking light signs that you remember maybe from your youth if you're old, certainly from old movies or something, where every town had something that looked like a tiny little Las Vegas with cascading lights, with chasing light bulbs, or humming neon tubes, like that. Everything sounded like a David Lynch movie. Oh, all these signs are all gaudy, everything gaudy and bright and whirling. That was the future as the past saw it. And so it'd be nice to go see the future as the past saw it. And that stuff's in the past. So let's go to the museum and see all these old, look at this Howard Johnson sign. So the neon implies motion. Did you ever see that? So they got the little picture of the pieman. Do you know the story of Howard Johnson's? So Howard Johnson's met a pieman going to the fair. Now, hang on now. Is that how it goes? Simple Simon. Wait. I don't know what this has to do with Howard Johnson. Let's say it's Howard Johnson. Howard Johnson, a.k.a. Simple Simon. That's how he'd rap as Simple Simon. But his name's Howard Johnson. But that's not very scary. So Simple Simon met a pieman. Okay? They used to have those. They don't have pieman as much anymore now. Pies are made either in factories or, you know, I'm a baker. I also make pies. But there was dedicated pieman. People would just make the pies. And it's how the surname pieman, if you know anybody by that last name. That's probably what their profession was. And they came from Pieman County. So he meets this pieman who's walking down the street wearing a chef's hat with pies stacked in his, don't get the bottom pies, the other tip. Always take the top pie of a pieman's pie stack. And he meets a pieman going to the fair. He says to the pieman, excuse me, not pieman, I'm going to the fair. Says the pieman to Simple Simon, first you have a penny. Says the Simple Simon to the pieman, no, I don't got any. Says the pieman to Simple Simon, well, to taste my ware, you've got to have some tare. And said, tare? They go with some confusion. So anyway, that whole interaction where they don't know what the other one's talking about, also one of them is from Kentucky, and the Simple Simon says, could you give me a sample? And the pieman says, I don't care to. And it gets very confusing, but that actually means I don't mind. So this picture of the pieman holding his hands out, feeding Simon, is also outlined in neon. But not, it's different movement stages. Do you feel me? Like they're frames. So they're just neon frames, and that's repeating. So if it were nighttime, you'd say that pieman is moving. The pieman, the outline of the pieman, at least, seems to be bowing over, giving pie to Simon, Simon Howard, Howard S.S. Johnson. And that's fabulous. And so there's this animation, this neon animation is going on, too. And I looked at that, and I thought, that gave me an idea about time. Look at that, because I thought of Zeno's arrow, which was also there. And you go, I don't understand. It's there in the Sign Museum, because Zeno's was a big chain, and Zeno's arrow, very famous. I don't know how times, what instances are, whether it's continuous or it's broken up into little instances. I don't know about infinity. I don't know about sets. A subset of infinity is infinite. That doesn't make any sense, does it? We've even have a hotel on the show. You say, well, that has an infinite amount of rooms. And you say, well, they're all full. And how is that possible? So we always discuss things like that on the show. And that actual hotel is in Cincinnati. So all this world building is coming together, isn't it? I love it. I love some of you. I've heard from some of you go, you're my character in D&D, Hardy. That's fabulous. I love it. I love it. Get those hit points or whatever. How many something do I have? Roll a die. I like that you're rolling platonic solids and everything. I think that's fabulous. I would do that too. Some of them tessellate better than others. Are you interested in three-dimensional tessellation? I love how objects like that go together, how geometric objects fit together, especially if I'm building something like a nest for my insect overlords. They're going, we would love some kind of three-dimensional geometric symmetry to it. I said, I can do that. I can do that for you. Oh, bug gods. They don't like to be called that. I'm glad they're not around. Signs are interesting because they point to something, but they aren't the thing. But in this case, they are the thing. The sign is the thing at the Sign Museum, not the thing it points to. It was very interesting. You walk in. I was very angry at first. I said, I'm here. I saw a sign for Howard Johnson's. Where is it? I want clams. I want a hot dog that's been split open and fried, and then it's on a piece of bread. I want all that. I want things that aren't, I'm on a diet, so I just thought I'd get a hamburger patty and some cottage cheese and a half a peach. And I'm told that I could do that at the Howard Johnson's. And then, after I eat all those clams, I get so sleepy, and they have a little motel right there. That's so brilliant. That's what I would do. It's great. They're finally catching on, and these restaurants are opening hotels and everything, because they go, oh, better. You don't want to drive home? Then you can sell more booze and everything. You can get drunk as hell. You go, we got a trough to throw up in, and then you just get on the elevator. And you do have to scan your key card. I've seen somebody get on the elevator, just stand there for infinity, because it won't go unless you scan the key card and then press the room number. I'm just telling you like it is, friends. I don't want you to get stuck on that elevator. And that's what it is sometimes when in life, when we refuse to admit that we've got to swipe something. So I've swiped. For me, it's would be jokes or ideas. I borrow them. I borrow them mainly. I try to only borrow them from the dead, because, or the disgraced. I find they're a treasure trove, because would anybody be mad at you? So I'm getting a lot of my material now from the disgraced, and I can't even, it's hard to even cull through. There's so much there. Some of it is disgraceful, though. That's the problem. Looking for the gems in there among the hasn't aged well stuff is difficult. But I don't mind. I'm a recycled type of person. And we have to admit that about ideas anyway. I think there's nothing more stunning than to see someone convinced of their originality. I find that that's a tell, I think. Say, oh, I'm pretty much the first one to, oh, yeah, are you though? Really? I mean, everybody's the first one to, I'm the first one to paint something on something else. So that's never going to happen. We're just layers. We're dealing with layers here. It's your turn to layer it. When I was sleeping over, when I was in Cincinnati, not the one we're in now, not the one that's time, but the literal one, I was watching I don't watch TV very, very often. I don't have like broadcast. You know the kind of TV you have in the hotel where you switch their channels? I don't have that anymore. Most of us don't, right? So I'm not used to just the, you know, you get what you get and that's what you get TV. But there was a reality show about people making moonshine. Oh, I've seen that one. There goes the comment board. That's not my point. But they were making this stack cake. That's the Appalachian kind of tradition where everybody brings, I don't know, big thing. Could be cardboard. I don't know what it is. And then you smear it with apple butter or something. Then you just keep stacking it up like that. That's what we're doing. Except that bottom stack was made a long, long time ago. And the things it is on have all rotted away. You can't even tell they were there. So as our portion will do that too. Oh my goodness. We're just being the living, which is a total crazy, unoriginal thing that only time makes original. And I like to think of it that way. I'm the only me. I mean, there's a lot of, I'm a type, but I mean, I'm the only me, really, strictly speaking. And I love being strict. So I'd say, you know, I'm content with that. And I've done my little part, and then I will move on. Not really. I guess I will just perish. That's difficult to think about. And I'm glad there is a moment, because it feels, right now, it's stretched out, feels eternal. Can feel eternally bad, eternally good. Do we have control of that, Hardy? Oh, I wish. That'd be like lucid dreaming. Yeah, they always say, oh, be in the moment. What if the moments are horrible? I don't want to be in any moment. That's why people escape in their mind sometimes. Is go, well, right now the moment is torturous. It feels like a living hell. We'll just be in it. No, I want to be in the past or something where it was nice, or in the future, in a time when this won't be the case. So there's no great, the now is neutral. Everything is. And I don't know that you can wheel yourself out of anything. And I'm glad that my whole time of talking to you, I've ever implied that you have any kind of, that there's anything you can do about anything. I hope not. Because, gosh, I don't want to hear that on the, well, only you can solve your problems. I don't know that's the case. That doesn't seem right. That doesn't. Only you could be, you decide whether you're joyous. I don't know. That doesn't ring true. It doesn't, really. I mean, I know we're supposed to take personal responsibility, and there's nothing you can do about that. You don't even have to take it. It'll be thrust upon you. People will make you responsible for all sorts of things that are beyond your control. So I don't know if that's anything you need to embrace particularly. Just surviving it, I think, is pretty good. Recognizing that others do. But really, when it comes down to it, gosh, you know, these so-called choices that I've been made, I don't even want to take credit for the good ones. I don't know if they were good. You know, I choose a door. Who knows what was behind it? It's always after the fact, I'm like, yep, you did the right thing. They're always talking to centenarians, old people, extremely old people. 100 plus, and they go, how did you live so long? And they say, eggs, or something like that. But don't listen to them. It's not, oh, I'm going to eat a bunch of eggs. If eating eggs kept you alive, Paul Newman would be alive, because he ate 50 of them in Cool Hand Luke. You know what I'm saying? And Harry Dean Stanton lived longer, didn't he? I think so. And he was smoking cigarettes and shooting up and stuff. So you can do whatever you want. Let me tell you something. I come to you in a spirit of openness, and I think it's love. What I am is I have given up, not in a bad way, but I have given up on certain things, on having control of certain things, because they were keeping me from making connections with people. And I couldn't have the connections with other human beings the way I wanted to if I was in this state of protective self-consciousness that I was in constantly. So I haven't changed anything fundamental about myself other than I have just stopped trying to actively control perception of myself. And I am now careening recklessly in this me. And my goodness, that's all right. You know, I don't mind it so much.
You don't mind if people don't like you?
Yes, I do. I am not unaffected by it. But I think somewhere deep down, though, I know that there's levels of things. And that's only on one level am I upset. But there's deeper chambers in me that no one can reach. And so, yes, I can get battered on the outside. But I'm like a Dalek. I don't know if you know what that is. A Doctor Who, there's these beings, and inside they're calamari. They're cooked, not even alive anymore. Just all yucky calamari hooked up to wires. But on the outside, they're this robot with a plunger and an egg whisk, and they shoot rather ineffectual ray beams or anything, but they're tough to kill, you know, because they're little tanks. And that's so I would say, I don't know where I was going with that. Let's say I'm a Dalek, but on the outside of the Dalek is some kind of skin where I can feel stuff. So when you do, I do feel it. It's just that the squishy inside part does ultimately get protected. But there could be, I still feel bad. Next question.
Where are we going after the Slide Museum?
Well, I was thinking of going to the Krone Conservatory.
What do they conserve there?
Well, I don't know. Plants, I think. So we're going to go. And I don't know if you've been here. Now, if you go during the holidays, I'm going to state things as they were once, within a specific hour, a specific day, last week maybe. So I'm saying it's now, but really I don't think that it is like that now, maybe. But the Cincinnati of a week ago will always be what it was, won't it? Even though it isn't that now. And yet for you, it isn't that yet, because I haven't told you. That's why Cincinnati is time. So you approach the Krone Museum, and let's say you get a parking space there. And yes, it is a big indoor garden thing, you know, like a glass conservatory. But there's a little shed during Christmas off to the side that serves as a manger. And in it are statues of Mary and Joseph and Jagadag, I don't know who else was there, and infant Jesus, and God, I went in, there was a statue. So you walk in this thing, they got it all recreated there with statues, but listen to this is the catch. The animals are real. The animals are real and moving. So there's a donkey or two. There is sheep, but they have them way separate because the sheep were eating the baby, I think, or something was eating the baby, nibbling at it. And then they've got, that's it. I know that's not a lot, but it seemed, in my mind, there was chickens, but I don't think there were chickens there. Funny you don't see that in a real manger scene. Another thing that did not have, which is a European tradition, Spanish, I think maybe a Catalan tradition, is the cogoner. Now, the cogoner is a figure in the little manger scene that is pooping, is squatting to poo, which is healthier for you than sitting on a toilet. So he's squatting and he's pooing. And then you say, isn't that blasphemous? You go, how, what do you mean? Well, he's desecrating. He's defecating. No, well, he's doing both. Okay. He's desecrating the scene because it's a, and hey, when you think about it, what's more natural? What are the animals doing as well? Why do we forget that? You know, that this is all peace on earth. What about poo as well? That's on earth. So we have to see the whole picture. And the odor, that's what's wonderful. A lot of religious experiences you have, you don't have with barn smells. And barn smells are the most evocative, wonderful thing. And I think only you'd make fun of somebody right from the city if they'd go, ooh, God, what's that? Because you walk in the morning and goes, I don't know. I know it's not supposed to smell great. It doesn't smell great, but it doesn't smell bad. It just smells like there's animals here. And animals being here is a good thing. Maybe if I smelled tiger scat, I would be instinctively nervous. But the turds of herbivores is not something that bothers me too much. So that's what it was. It was the turds of herbivore, which I think is from Tolkien, isn't it? We can enlist. If we're getting help to go take the ring back, we simply must have the turds of herbivores behind us on our side. And we can make all sorts of things with them. I think we can polish floors with it. Isn't that amazing? People are so resourceful. Use it for fuel, you know? Love it. Oh, I don't have peat to dry my barley for my whiskey. So I'm going to use this turd, this cow turd or something, and I'm going to make Jack Daniels. No, I don't know what I'm going to make with it. You can make anything. Oh, my goodness. If we're going to be really here at the Chrome Museum, we've got to go in. We've got to pay our $500. No, it's not that much. I don't know. I'm going to get everybody, though. Hey, they're all with me. So just tally it up and bill me. Ken Friedman is my name. So we're all going to go in. And now, the minute you walk into this place, your eyeglasses are going to fog up permanently because the humidity here, it's worse than anything. It's worse than Central Florida or something. North Florida in the summer. It's like that. So you walk in and everything else is that's the flora of Boca. Basically, crotons everywhere, palms and everything. All these things, if you could have a space capsule around Boca Raton and then just, there it is with streams and everything. And because it's the holidays or maybe all the time, they've got these little trains going around through the crotons and the elephanear gazanjas and the garbunulas and everything like that. They got it all. And then they got it all Christmas decked out in some other areas, going through cactuses and everything. And then they have buildings, Cincinnati landmarks, made out of what looks to be resin or something. I don't know what it is. Something dark and foreboding. I really don't know what it could be. Chopped liver with some polyurethane on it is what it looked like. I'm being as exact as I can be. I don't know what it was. They were all, it could tell it was handmade. And it was interesting to me. They've got some interesting buildings there. The Procter & Gamble building, which isn't very old, but it looks like it's Art Deco, but it's from the like 80s or something. And it was there made out of, again, I don't know, sugar-free chocolate. It had that, some kind of cast to it. Trains, little trains going around, and everything just with that dampness. I don't know. I think it felt, you know what it felt like to me? It felt like an alien race had like convinced someone. You know how they put like a bacteria in your brain and make you do something? Cats will do this with their own filth, will make you, will addle you enough that you have a lot of them. And they use their own waste as the mechanism. And I believe that somehow these aliens got control of people. And they say, build us this environment. It's like a very humid Boca. And keep it like that. steam, and because it's very uncomfortable in there. For me, I couldn't get my breath. I like saying, you know, humid air. It's not bad. I couldn't breathe. I was, oh, oh. You know, where's virtual Arizona or something? I can't do this. Or where's the breeze, you know? So it was very close. So I'm thinking, this feels like an ideal environment for another kind of creature that's covered with mucus or something. I don't even know. I'm just speculating. And maybe they're hiding there among the century plants and the Christmas cacti and all this, the succulents. There was a succulent geranium. It looks like a geranium, but it's a succulent. And it's terrifying. You know? I mean, it'd be like seeing something go, that looks like a cat. Oh, God, it's a reptile. That's what the feeling I got. Go, that's no geranium. So a lot of the cacti give me that feeling, kind of an alien feeling. And, oh, no, where I'm from, we have those. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm not saying where you live is alien. But it was just an interesting contrast because outside was so cold. The big cold snap hadn't come yet, but it was still pretty cold outside. And it is now, if it's winter. If it's not, I don't know when you're listening to this, and I don't know what kind of environment you're in. So I'm stifling under this electric blanket. So it's not cold, or you are, is what you're saying. No. When you said electric blanket, I really want to quote My Dinner with Andre and what Wallace Shawn says about his electric blanket, and Andre has an opinion of the electric blanket too, but his is misguided. Like, I just don't think getting up it's going to, even if you have an electric blanket and you have to get up in the middle of the night, it's cold when you go to the bathroom. I don't see his point. So I guess you had to see the movie, but it's still bothering me. A lot of things eat away at me like that. And I know they do on the comment board, because I'll say something, I'll say like a type of donut or something, and people will. It triggers, not triggers in a bad way, but I mean it sets off something, like the first domino of an OK Go video. And then you never know what's going to happen. Everything that comes out of my mouth is like that. I realize that. That's why I like to keep it coming, so it doesn't, you lose focus. I think it's very bad for one thing to follow the other in a logical way. Oh, it takes you right into a corner, you know. It really, really, things spin out of control in a predictable way. You don't want that. You know, I think the only way to really exercise any kind of free will is in a state of absolute chaos and confusion. Otherwise, things set into a course pretty quickly. You can do that with your whole life. You decide to be a certain type or a certain person, and all of a sudden you're that, and there's nothing you can do about it. And you wake up one day and you're wearing a tie and people are calling you sir or something like that, and it isn't who you are. But, you see, you've kind of let one thing lead to the other. You just weren't chaotic enough. You need to undo some things as they're done, I think. So, I don't know. I don't know how it's done, any of this is done, but my life, which has been absolute, confusion, pretty much, is, and I don't know that I'm doing that on purpose, but that part I think is working out rather well. It's the set part, you know, that is not, the expectations that are not, the role that you fall into. That's the hard one. You say, well, I am what's a fancy name? I am a Sherbright Hacker hyphen Packerton, and Sherbright Packertons, there's certain things that are expected of us. You might have family expectations or something like that, or you're very tall, but you're not sports. So you know how that is. People think you're one thing, and those can propel you. You know, you can get on that train, or you can pretend to get on the train and then get off on the other side, which is what I do, and just keep doing that, confusing yourself and others. Please describe what you're doing right now. I'm walking some friends toward time in a sort of guided tour. And I'm using Cincinnati to bring concrete terms to something that can't really be described that way. I'm making something physical that doesn't seem to have any physicality. But we're with it always. It's something that absolutely is the number one cause, problem, everything. Everything that makes life tragic is time. Everything. So what are you going to do about it? It seems like people are doing very little about it. Say, well, it's just what is it? No, you can't even say what is, because it's the minute it isn't again. Whatever is, was, and whatever is, will be. You're not saying anything. That's how they get you. That's how they get you, is by saying you're not saying anything, or you're being absurd, or it doesn't make any sense. It isn't about that. It's just feel your way through. Don't think your way through it. Feel your way through it. You know, I'm really interested not only in, first of all, I don't understand physicists when they talk to me about what they think the nature of time is. Two, I don't really understand a lot of brain scientists, of neuroscientists, when they explain to me. But you know what I like? Is I like wacky people's theories of what time is, because they speak to how it's experienced by someone who has no evidence. And that is very enlightening as far as I'm concerned. I like to hear how our imagination deals with it, because that is the boots on the ground right there. That's the proof of the pudding. That's the real reality of it. You say, well, when it's explained to me, it doesn't make any sense. You know, how does it feel? What does it feel like it's happening? That's what's of interest to me, because it doesn't really matter. At the end of the day, the feeling is what's going to affect me. That's what's going to make me sad or anything like that. So I've got to get a kind of handle on what it is I'm feeling. What's my relationship to it? So I've talked about my relationship to Cincinnati. I don't live there. I could visit there if I wanted to, and I'm taking you there. So, you know, maybe I like being outside of time. Maybe I think it's useful. Maybe I don't mind it. Maybe I don't mind drifting. Do you? Do you have to be headed somewhere all the time? Do you have to be headed somewhere? Does there have to be a destination? Well, let it be Cincinnati, but not the real one. The one that is filled with possibilities. It can be anything you want. Anything is there. Anything is in that Cincinnati. And so we go there and we can create a museum with our brain and walk through it like it's our brain house. See what's on the walls. Pictures of our youth. Friends. Parties that we've been to. Whole parties. Whole events pinned to the wall like that that we can look at and lose ourselves in. That we can cry about or laugh about. I love doing it with you. I love being there with you and experience. I'm glad that we're alive at the same time. Oh, boy, oh, boy. You know, this is, I don't want to make too much of it, the being alive thing. You know, I know that we're supposed to pretend that we have an infinite amount of time, that all of this just keeps going on or it's disposable. Yeah, I'm bored. Something to get through. Oh, sometimes even when I'm having a hard time or I'm grieving or something, I do a weird kind of savoring. I've experienced it at funerals or time when there is grief, where even if the experience is kind of bitter or sour or sad, you know, I'm still kind of clinging to it. And I wonder what that is. This attraction to the temporariness. I don't mind it so much sometimes. When I lose myself, when I'm able to sort of dissipate, when I can become radio waves. When we're together, it's like that too. You know, when there's a group of us and we're all together and you look around the party and you go, gosh, this is great. It's not about me. It's not about me. And there's a sort of like joy, sadness that might come when you say, if I evaporated right now, would anybody notice? But then I could go up to that person right now and give them great happiness. And someone would notice. And they say, I'm glad Hardy's here. It can be both at the same time, and that's liberating. I feel liberated by that. Oh, I don't want all the responsibility. Oh, I don't want all of it. I don't mind being us. I don't mind losing myself a bit, because I know that sort of when I retreat to a lonely place where you are not, and the you that is there is a sort of different you or a shadow you. And so I love being on the outside too. Oh, what are you talking about, Hardy? I don't know. Well, I do and I don't. I don't know. I feel what I'm talking about. But I don't exactly know. And I think you sound crazier when you purport to know, when the absurdity is coming from purported knowledge. You know what I'm saying? So I'd say there's a race of alien beings, and like I say, they're insects, and like I say, they're living at the Crone Conservatory, and like I say, I build tessellated nests for them, and I'm telling you all this. Now, if I was to say that that's actual and factual, and I know it, that sounds kind of lunatic. I don't know if it's true or not, but it sounds nuts. But the things I feel, they can't ever be nuts, because you know that you don't have much control over that, too. You know that those feelings just sort of happen, and they're unprocessed. They're just the raw stuff. And then we go around trying to make sense of them. Everything that we know, all our knowledge, is just us making sense of feelings. You know, we have an impression of something, and then comes the figuring it out. But the impression comes first. What was that? That scared me to death. I need to look into that. Is that something benign or something genuinely scary? But it starts with a feeling. Oh, I hope that I've brought you something to feel about. Today you've got enough to think about, and now you just have something to feel, to toss over in your mouth. Some things don't have to be nourishing. Licking the filling of one of those sandwich cookies. That's just pure experience. And I don't mind that. I don't mind being the big bone lick that you can come to if you're thirsty. Don't do it. If you're a thirsty buffalo or bison or whatever, don't lick more salt. Arrgh! Don't drink salt water either. Look for some refreshing fresh water that isn't some sort of swamp that you're going to fall in, get stuck, and then have human beings with the spears come and eat your bowels. You don't want that. So be careful how much on your salt intake and everything. Do I need to watch that? I might. Am I? You don't sound like you have hypertension, don't I? Get yourself checked out. Get yourself a blood pressure cuff. Consult with your doctor. Look at that blood pressure. You want to get that under control. And could lead to stroke, to kidney disease, all sorts of things. So, hey, older folks, get checked out. There's a lot to fear, a lot of scary stuff ahead, a lot of absolutely terrifying piper paying now that you've survived. Woof, boy, I've survived it. I've lived into old age. It hasn't even started. No, I'm kidding. I don't mean to scare you. But it doesn't matter. It doesn't. I'm going to be gentle with you because I love you. And you know I'm going to give you a big hug at the end. I'm just having fun. I like to make light of some things just because, gosh, what are you going to do? And so this, apparently, right? It's funny. They give you, so you have people's ear, Hardy. What are you going to say? And you'd think maybe if it was you, you'd say, well, I want to say something important. Well, you know, you might never say anything then. There's a paralysis with planning. You know, you can really plan yourself into inaction sometimes. Sometimes it's just good to do it and then flee the country. Or just change your name or lie that it happened is a good thing. No, it's not. Is it a good thing? I don't know. This is not. I'm not here to talk about ethics, although I'd love to. Maybe I will. Oh, I should do that. I need to learn more, though. I'm telling you, stay right here. I'm going to go get a degree, and I'll be right back. That is unfortunately a bit of a limitation that I have, as I am not an expert, and you would expect somebody to be know a little more about something. Not true. I have been entertained by people saying all sorts of things. So it's really, the burden is on the audience, I think. The burden is always on the listener and the observer. You don't know that what you're hearing is intended to be entertainment or intended to be edifying, or you don't know whether it's a failed lesson, whether it's bad art, or whether it's just something that's happening, something you're seeing. Which is it? You're the one who brings the evaluation to it. You're the judge. So if you're going to go around observing and looking and judging, understand that that may not be the other end of the relationship. That the thing that's instigating it might not be an artist. It might not have any kind of intent. You might be watching and listening to something that is random. Oh, my friends, as we near this new year, as we're entering a new year of 2007, I like to leave these evergreen. I don't want to say anything specific, but we might be entering a new year. And if we are, what does that mean? Nothing. That doesn't mean anything. It really doesn't. It just leaves me feeling really cold and weird that people think it's... Every time there's a new year, it feels like something's supposed to happen. And when you're coming up, you have that image of the old man is supposed to die and then he gets regenerated as a baby or something, and it's some kind of twisted, eternal Doctor Who calendar thing. And I don't really subscribe to that, and that just feels like, you know, what do you mean that last year is dead and gone? It was just yesterday. It doesn't make any sense. It's a weird, arbitrary delineation. Nothing is happening right there. So it's always the new year, every year. And people have new years in other cultures happen at all different times, don't they? So every day is a new year for me. And I try to, I get forced into recognizing the one that happens at the end of December and beginning of January, but really, boy, that could be any time for us, friends. I would like to thank you now for listening this year. It's been a wonderful thing. Let's listen back to some things that happened during the course of the year. Well, roll the tape.
Nothing's happening.
Nothing's happening. Nothing. We have no tape. Nothing happened. It's all gone now. The old man, New Year's, lays shivering and emaciated in his bed of the past, waiting for to transform into a little newborn thing that's all soft. And he can keep the diapers, the same diapers, just make them smooth. They need to be taken in, so slightly altered. And also the sash needs to be updated to the new date. But other than that, the same thing. And then we're going to visit middle age. This summer we'll be visiting middle-aged year, where it's like a old middle-aged person in diapers again, but in the summer. And so it seems appropriate. So you go, those are bathing trunks. Are they? Or is that a person a physical manifestation of a year? So why couldn't Cincinnati be time? Thank you for traveling with me through time. This is Hardy White, and you're listening to Miracle Nutrition on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County and New York City, New York, and online worldwide, WFMU.org, Freeform Radio, loving it, doing it. Thank you so much, and I will see you again next week.
Twins' name was Ebony. Her name was Mahogany. 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 Twins' name was Ebony.
Cuidado, mami. Mira, mira.
Excuse.
Sorry.
Here you go.
Rise above their knowledge, they could see nature as it is, and they would understand that there are other planes of nature greater than the plane they know. All around them are the other measures to the other wisdom, ignorance, myth. Why should a god visit earth if to be only a slave to man? Why should a god visit earth if to be only a slave to man? Why should a man be a slave to man if only to be a slave to man? Or a man to God, or a god to man, if only to be within a state unnatural to his natural self, or altered self? Why should a god visit earth if only to be a slave to man? When men are brothers, they are brothers because they know they are. They walk the initiate bridge degree of pointlessness. They are friends of pointless intuition, companionship, sincere understandingness of and on angelic planes of being. That is why I have said they are not my brothers, if they are not my brothers. See how the black rays of the black race have touched immeasurable wisdom and therefore the unknown quantity. See how they are not understood because as they are is not understood, and as to what they know is what they are. See the unlimited freedom of the black rays. Only to be bottomlessly humble is to be bottomlessly cast out until there's none to compare. Only to be bottomlessly ignorant is to be the other state of ecstasy, that ignorance which is odd unto the unknown. And this unknown is of the greater chaos, for chaos is immeasurable. A design formless as to the idea of form, and of the desire to synchronize to what is, which is and yet is not the end. Paradox, paradox, a synchronization to the infinity, the knowing, cosmic chaos. When you meet a man, you meet a scheme of words, patterns of concept, a concepted being whose very birth conception is called. Someone took the tender care to win a victory by defeat, and with defeat made defeat the defeat of the universe. There never had been a feat like this defeat. Defeat is the scenario of the life and lives of the people and peoples of planet Earth. to see is defeat to understand. I may be here, maybe not. I've never been inside life. Always I have looked through the glass at those within. There was no door for me to enter. I had no place to call my home. I had no people to call my own. I was and am theirs. If they cared it, I'd be. But since they came before me, how can I say they are mine? How can I say I can call them my own? Perhaps they are a world of aliens, barring I, the alien, out. So out became the truth for me instead of in. There's no room for those of out in the in. There's no room for those of out in the in. It is written, there was no room in the in. There's life in life. Is life temporary? In life, everyone seems to be temporary. It is temporary. Is it temporary? What can people do worse than the way life is allowed to treat them in the enforced roles of the game of life? Life allots to them their allotment. But their lot is a heap of shame and vanity. The useless end, inconsolable death, grief. I speak of, but I do not speak of anything, because I speak of everything. I speak of I, but when I speak of me, it is a we, because we are, and that is why we be and am and is. We walk the earth together, and together we will, and do sail the skies of other climes and worlds eternal. As me, I'm here, but as I, I am always there. As me, I'm here, but as I am always there, but somewhere else or there, because of the needs and yearnings of the us and we. We are small. Point, cosmo, infinity, power. We are. We are so tiny, you see. We are. We. We belong to the we people of us. We belong to the we people of us. We're so tiny, you see.